did our first parents continue in the estate wherein they were created? Our first parents, being left to the freedom of their own will, fell from the estate wherein they were created by sinning against God.
In this next question, we take up the doctrine of the freedom of the will. So the freedom of the will. The Catechism is referring to man's first state. And it says that in his first state, in the Garden of Eden, he had freedom of the will. And in that freedom, he fell from that estate. He used the freedom of his will to sin against God. So he fell from the estate by sinning against God. And it's helpful here to appreciate some of the background, right? We speak about, or we hear people speak about freedom of the will. Do people have a free will or not have a free will? It's helpful, I think, to step back and say, well, we need to actually think about how this question is answered historically throughout mankind's history. And so I want to break this down into some categories for us that I think will serve to that end. We have the states in which man finds himself. Here it's talking about his state of innocency or before the fall. Then there we can ask the question, what was the will able to do in that state? And then I want you to see the relationship between how Augustine answered this question and how the Westminster Confession of Faith answers this question. So here in question 13, we have a very brief answer, but you can go, some of you children who are able to read well enough, go to the confession, Westminster Confession of Faith, chapter 9, and you'll see this fleshed out, all that I'm going to describe here in the next few minutes, you'll see it fleshed out in greater detail. So there's the first state, the first position, condition that man found himself in was pre-fall. So before the fall, in the garden, in Eden. And we're told that he had freedom of the will, which is to say he had the ability to do both good and evil. He could do both good and evil. Now, the four states that I'm going to describe for you here, which the confession outlines as well, are traced back to a very important godly theologian of the early church, whose name was Augustine. He was one of the most significant theologians, not just in the early church, but throughout the history of the world. Now, Augustine didn't live in Britain or America, of course, at that time. He was from North Africa, but he spoke Latin. And so the way that he described this, the distinctions that I'm going to lay out, were in Latin. And normally I wouldn't burden you with this sort of thing, but it actually could be helpful to some of you. So I'm going to actually give you the Latin as well as the English here. We refer to the four states that we're going to be talking about sometimes as Augustine's passes. It's because it comes from the Latin word, which has to do with ability, the verb to be able to do something. So in this first estate, he said that man was, you write it out, he was passe non peccare. Passe non capare, which means able not to sin. So this ending here shows you that it's an infinitive, to sin. Able, Adam was able not to sin. And this is covered in Westminster Confession, chapter 9, paragraph 2. So here is Adam in his first estate, freedom being left to the freedom of his own will. He fell from this estate by sinning against God. So the second state is post-fall, or after the fall. And here, man is only able to do evil. He can only do evil. The way that Augustine described this is non passe. non pecare, which means not able, not to sin, literally. And this is found in Westminster Confession 9, paragraph 3. So after the fall, the natural man, the unconverted person, is not able not to sin. So in other words, he can only sin. A person who's not a Christian is not able to do anything but sin. Even the charitable deeds and what appear to be kind things that they do, they're not for the glory of God. They're not flowing from gospel grace in their souls, and they're directed to the wrong ends, and they're deemed unacceptable before the Lord. So Paul talks about this. There are none that seek after God, no, not one. There are none that are righteous, right? All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And there are lots of other passages, like Ephesians 2, where it says, "You hath he quickened who were dead in trespasses and sin." There's a spiritual deadness, an inability to do what is spiritually good. Or in 1 Corinthians 2, the natural man can't discern what is spiritual. He's blind. He's ignorant. He's unable to see and do what would be pleasing to the Lord. The next estate due to the gospel is post-conversion. So a person becomes a Christian. And in that estate, they're able to do both good and evil. So now a Christian can do things that please the Lord as well as sin. Here, the way that Augustine described this is passe peccare et non peccare, which means able to sin, et and not to sin. So he's both able to sin and not to sin. You'll see this in Confession 9, paragraph 4. So the Christian is in a position where he or she is able to do what pleases the Lord as well as able to sin at times. So you'll see in Romans 7, there's Paul describing the war within the Christian. He sees the law of God, it's holy, just, and good. He delights in it after his inward man, but he also discovers another law that is within him, the law of indwelling sin that wars against him, so that there are times when what he wants to do, he doesn't do. What he doesn't want to do, he does do at times. And so there's this battle that's taking place. Man is able, the Christian is able to do what's genuinely pleasing to the Lord and glorifies him, and they're also able to sin against him. The third state is heaven. In heaven, man is only able to do good. Here, the way that Augustine put it is non passe peccare, which by this point you can translate for yourself, if you've been following, right? Not able to sin. Not able to sin. And this is in chapter 9 of the Confession, paragraph 5. So you can see the relationship. You can see that the Westminster Confession, our Reformed fathers weren't just producing things out of the thin air. There was a context for the questions in which they were discussing and debating things. This whole question of free will was set against this backdrop, and they overtly rely upon the truth that that had been taught from the ancient church by a theologian named Augustine. And the Latin here is so simple. You only need to know, what, three words, right? Passe is the word able. Known not, and peccare to sin, and it's just different combinations of those same words. So for those who are interested, the children can memorize this little bit of Latin and be able to keep the distinctions in their head. So we come to heaven,
And just as I was explaining in a previous question, the angels were confirmed in their righteousness, the elect angels, and not able to sin. They go on in that holiness for all of eternity. That will be the privilege of the Christian as well, that after we die, our souls are made perfect in holiness, the Catechism says later on. Our bodies, still in union with Christ, rest in the graves until the resurrection. And at the second coming of Christ, we have resurrected bodies, sinless souls, united in the service of God for all of eternity, so that you're not able to sin, you're not inclined to. Right now, because of indwelling sin in our souls, there is still an appetite for sin and an inclination towards sin. In heaven, we are perfected. The completed work of redemption is brought to its height, and we don't have an appetite for sin, and we won't have inclination for sin. What's more, we will not have the ability to sin. It will be impossible for us to sin. And you'll see this in several places as well. It speaks about the just that are perfect in Hebrews 12. In 1 John 2, it speaks about how when we see Christ, we will be made like him. So we will be made without sin. You see it in places like Jude 24 and so on. So subsequent to the Westminster Confession, others have picked up on this. So one book is Thomas Boston. He was a Scottish Presbyterian minister in the 1700s, early 1700s, his ministry was. And he wrote a book called Human Nature in its Fourfold State. So he was looking at human nature in these four states, in these four buckets, if you will. And it ended up becoming a classic. It was, along with Pilgrim's Progress, one of the most read books, at least in Scotland, for quite a long time. Even in the 19th century, most people would have had a copy of that on their shelf, where he fleshes out this doctrine in some detail. So when the question comes up now, you know, what about man's free will? Does man have a free will? You know, we need to be able to say with the Bible and the Catechism, well, man was created with a free will. He had the ability to do good and evil, but he fell from that state where he enjoyed that freedom of the will by sinning against God, by choosing to do evil. And when we think about man's free will now, it needs to be set within this context, right? Where having fallen and not been converted, sorry, in this context here, not able not to sin, we're viewing man in light of his current position. He is spiritually dead, he is blind, he is ignorant, and he is unable to do anything, including seeking God in his own native power. God has to come with his grace and break into our world in order to impart the ability to man. We'll come back to this in what follows, but man's ability to choose things is controlled by his nature. Because his nature is sinful, he can only do what is in keeping with his nature. A dog is free to fly if it wants to, but it's not able to. Right? It's not part of its nature, the way that it's made. And so it's likewise. Man has no ability because of his sinful nature to do that which would please the Lord. So here we have a description of what transpired at the fall itself. Did our first parents continue in the estate wherein they were created? Our first parents, being left to the freedom of their own will, fell from the estate wherein they were created by sinning against them.